Welcome back to the second hour of 2 Hours of Jewish Soul. As you know it, I'm not saying soul music. This is Charlie Bernhout. We're in the 3 weeks, and I've decided that I'm going to be doing some interviews in place of playing music. And the second hour will feature cantor Danny Gildar and my friend Levi Kanes, who, if you're not familiar with him, you'll hear some of his wonderful involvement with Chazanut. So without further ado, let's get to Danny. I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone my good friend and the outstanding, the world's greatest, if you will, accompanist for Chazanim, and he's also a very fine voice teacher, Danny Gildar. Shalom, Danny.
Shalom, Charlie.
Let's begin just by telling us where you were born and where you were raised.
Yes, I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, October 2nd, 1945. I'm about to celebrate my 70th birthday pretty soon. And I was raised in the, I was born in Mount Sinai Hospital, and we lived in the city until 1957 when we moved up to the suburbs, suburb of University Heights.
When did you first become interested in Jewish music?
Well, I'll tell you, I started out in music at age 4, actually. I was sort of what you call a child prodigy. I was able to play music by ear on the piano, you know, without having any training. I used to sit and play themes off the radio, themes off the television, and so on. And my uncle, Oliver Sholem, who was a professional musician, a professional pianist and flutist, discovered that I had great ability. And at age 5, he enrolled me in the conservatory, Cleveland Institute of Music.
At age 5?
At 5, I started, yes. And all the teachers over there were all his friends, you know, in the theory department and so on.
Uh-huh.
And they started me in music, so I was really reading music at age 5 and 6 already. I was already able to read.
You were playing the piano.
I started, yes, very early. And the teacher would play something on the piano. I was able to write it down, on notes.
Uh-huh.
At early age. And when I turned 8, my uncle started me on flute lessons, so I really play the flute also. I don't have the time today to practice it anymore, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
But so I really have my uncle to thank for my beginnings in music. As far as the Chazon is concerned, my grandmother, Alea Sholem, and grandfather, Oliver Sholem, had an old Victrola years ago, and they had old 78 records, which I'm sure you are very familiar with, being a collector as I am. And they had the records of Yossel Rosenblatt. So I began to listen to those records and I was able to repeat back some of it and got very interested in it. And I even started to be able to write down the music also. I still have some of those early notations, which I laugh at today when I look at them. You know? Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's an incredible story.
Very early.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you became interested just through hearing the records?
Through hearing, Rosenblatt was my first inspiration. Because my grandmother had a recording of Tao. I'm sure you're familiar with that piece.
Mm-hmm.
That he sings on a recording with together with Malofsky. Oh no, I think it was Levi Rosenblatt or brother-in-law Kaufman. He made, I think, several versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to repeat back, and that was my first piece that I got involved in, and then it all went on from there. And I started to get interested in records and started to buy the LP. They started putting out the LP reproductions, you know, of these old records.
Yeah, greater recording and others, yeah.
Yeah, the Brown record, you know, the Rosenblatt with the Brown cover. I think I still have my original LP, which is probably so scratched you probably can't even hear anything on it anymore from playing it so much. Yeah.
So that was through your teenage years. Then
happened? I also started to play for weddings, where that's a cousin was singing. At age 9 or 10, I was already playing wedding ceremonies, where they were still singing, the singer was still singing Because. You remember that song?
Sure, sure.
You know, those old songs, I Love You Truly and all that kind of stuff, including the Mendelssohn Wedding March.
Oh, wow.
And the other stuff that they were still using in those days. So I would get hired. I think I would get $5 or something.
Uh-huh.
And if there was a chazan, I was playing along, and I already knew how to do that at a very early age already.
So then did you take courses in music theory later on?
Yeah, sure. I was a student at the Cleveland Institute of Music, where we studied keyboard harmony, regular harmony. There was something called Velcro's Eurythmics, which was a sort of a gymnastic thing where you walked one rhythm in your feet and you clapped another rhythm in your hands. It was created by this French person by the name of Dalcroze. And that helped you to learn how to play cross rhythms and stuff. So I had a very thorough education, thanks to my uncle. When my uncle passed away in 2004, when I gave the eulogy, I spoke about the fact that my success is probably, I owe most of my success to him, because he was the one that put me into music. And then from the going into regular music, led me into Chazonis eventually, and Jewish music, Yiddish, and so on. And I also learned to speak Yiddish through my grandmother, grandparents, because, and my parents also spoke Yiddish when they didn't want us to understand what they're saying, you know?
Yes, of course.
So I decided to master this language. Musicians have good ears for language anyway. So I was able to pick this language up, so they couldn't really talk behind my back anymore because I understood everything they were saying. Yeah.
You also speak Hebrew?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you live in Israel?
No. I studied, you know, and I have a flair for language. I can I pick up the language easily. So and I have some of my voice students. I teach voice in Lakewood, New Jersey, twice a week. And many of my students, some of them speak Yiddish. And I have occasionally Israeli students where we do the entire lesson in Hebrew language.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yes?
I understand you also can give lessons via the phone.
Yes, I do. I do that. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get me to get into this Skype thing, but the only thing I have at the moment is an iPhone. I have not come into the computer world yet. I'm probably going to end up doing it very soon, and I'll have to have my granddaughter teach me how to use it.
Well, thank God for the grandchildren, that's for sure.
Yeah, because they understand a lot more than we old folks understand.
So then you got involved with the cantorial circuit. I mean, you tell me how that developed.
Before, I decided to move to the East.
Wait, in what year?
64.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I decided to move to New York because, you know, that's where it was all happening over there. That's where you had the Koussevitzky brothers. That's where Genshoff was. That's where all the luminaries who I used to listen to on the Cleveland radio program on Sunday. There was a chazan in Cleveland by the name of Nissenson. And he used to run a Sunday show where he played cantorial music, Hasidic music, whatever it was in those days,
mm-hmm.
and Yiddish. And I said, boy, I would love to be in an area where these people are all floating around so I could go and hear them in person and get become part of the scene. So I did. And I went and I studied actually privately with David Koussevitzky, who's an accompanist I became eventually.
Uh-huh.
And I encountered Sholem Katz I played for. I played for Moshe Genshoff. I even played with Shmuel Vagoda. He was quite old already by that point. But he lived until almost 100 years old.
Yes, yes. And he wrote an interesting book also about Chazonis.
Yes, I've read it already a few times. A very interesting book.
Mm-hmm.
And I even have some interviews I have in my collection. I have interviews with him. I have interviews with David Koussevitzky, interviews with Danto, different things.
Dan, you have to share that with me so I can share it with the audience. I mean, these are historical.
Yeah, I think some of these things are from the project that Mark Slobin, I think, did.
Oh, yes. Yes, the Chosen Voices.
Yeah,
Yes.
So I think
yes.
that's already out and available. That's maybe where these things came from. Probably.
I see. Okay, I'll have to listen to the. There was a CD with his book. I'll have to. I've listened to it in the past, but it's been quite a while. So
the CD includes all the interviews there?
I don't know. I'm going to listen to it again. But so you were in the New York area, and you accompanied all these famous chazanim.
I started to get involved. I played originally with the Zimmelman brothers. When they became the Zimmel brothers, and then they took off the EL and became Zim brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yes. Their father was a chazan also, whom I also met.
Uh-huh.
His father was a chazan in Portland, Maine.
Yes.
I
think it was Samuel.
And I played with them when they were first starting out, when they were first fledgling duo, you know,
yes.
in the beginning years, in the 60s.
Yes. Those were great years. And mm-hmm. Then you spread out and really are international.
Yeah, then I got involved with it. Then I was involved in the beginning phases of several careers. You know, Bencio Miller, for example, my dear friend for over 40 years. I had a lot to do with the beginning stages where, you know, we used to have the conventions in Grossinger's Hotel.
Yes.
I don't know if you were involved in that.
No, that was before my time.
Yeah, so we used to, there were the conventions, and I used to organize in the lobby after hours. We used to have what we call a jam session.
Oh, well, wait a second. No, I did attend some of those. Yes, I remember Saturday night. It would go on until early in the morning.
Yeah, I wish I could get some recordings of some of that stuff. There were hours and hours of stuff there. I used to run around with my Norelco 101 reel-to-reel portable tape recorder that looked like a radio, if you remember what those were.
Interesting. Yeah.
Except I didn't have the presence of mind to turn the machines on when we were doing the jam session. Yeah, there was hours of material.
I know.
So somebody like Yaakov Mutzen, for instance, got his first exposure over there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Duda Fischer even was there. Louis Dantov, v'sholem, sang at night. Pinchas Rabinovich. All these people that are anything today. Got up there when they were not known the way they are today, and they started to get concerts and things, which I was very happy about. You know, very happy that I was able to help somebody. You know.
Yes, it must be very gratifying.
Very gratifying, and these people have international careers today.
Mm-hmm.
And it all. I'm not going to say necessarily started there, but I know that it was a big help because some of the best work that was done at those conventions used to happen at these jam sessions. Because the formal concerts, everybody's nervous. They want to make sure they do well. They get uptight. When we used to take the jackets off, get up there informally, you know, just have a good time. People were sitting
yes.
out there. We would, one time one jam session went till 6 a.m.
Well, when Benny and I ran our Shabbos weekends on Saturday night, they were open mics or jam sessions, and we certainly came across some very interesting and wonderful new talent. You may be aware that Chaim Wiener recently came out with YouTubes of a lot of his concerts in Eastern Europe and concerts
well,
at his home.
I was involved with all that.
I know, you were in them. I know you don't have a computer and you don't go to YouTube, but you got to get your granddaughter.
No, but I have YouTube on my phone. I could access it through
Oh, really? Okay, so you really should look up Chaim Wiener Chazonas or a Cantora.
I have the original recordings of those things on VHS tapes.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, we got sets of those when we did this. We were all given sets, you know, they're in big boxed things with a brochure inside and everything. I have most of that over here.
I see. So you were involved with Chaim Wiener from the beginning?
Well, the way I got involved with Chaim Wiener is an interesting story in itself. In 1980, I think it was, That was the year I went over with David Kusovitsky of Shalom. We did a concert in Hechal HaTarbut, you know, in the Mann Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
We did a half a show, and the other half was the Duda Fischer and Avi Albrecht. I think they had, they called themselves in those days Achim Fischer. So one half of the show was David and I, and the other half was them. There could have been about 3,000 people there.
Yes.
And while I was in Israel, Chaim Wiener celebrated, I think, a bat mitzvah or something of his daughter, I believe it was, or something. There was something like that. And that's where I first met him. And David had already been involved with him before that. And then from there, he decided to start to do concerts in Florida. And he used to have parties at the house, at his home in Biscayne Bay, I think it was, where he lived before. He moved from there since. And he used to have house parties, catered parties, poolside, you know. And inside, he would set chairs up, and there was a grand piano, and we used to do concerts in the house.
Well,
are you familiar with Irving Cutler?
No.
Irving Cutler was his sidekick. He just passed away a couple of months ago at age 92, and he used to be his helper, you know, associate. He would set up the talent. He would arrange everything, and these concerts were, those are also recorded someplace. Everything he did, I think he always recorded.
Yes, well, I think he intends to put most of them on YouTube. He
was. So you'll see me there too, mostly.
Oh yes, you know? Yes, I've seen you already, and I know he also was involved with cruises, I believe.
He got into associated with the Lubavitch, you know, with Chabad. He did a series of cruises as well, which I also was part of. First to Costa Rica was the first, you know, Yehuda Shiffman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he decided to do also in association with American Express and Chabad. And he ran the concerts. We went to Alaska. We went several places. And we used to have grand concerts in these cruises.
Yes, I've heard that they were really magnificent.
I'm sure all that's recorded too someplace.
So you've been really traveling the world, spreading Chazonis, and how do you? I'm constantly amazed how you can just sit at the piano, and I've seen this at the Kumsitzim that we ran, for instance, at the Westside Institutional. You would sit at the piano, and someone would come up and say, "Here's the song, and play it in this key," and with no music, you just are able to beautifully accompany these singers. I'm in awe of this.
You see, first of all, I have so much knowledge, so much chazonis in my head, and have been with it for so many years. So I know you develop a tremendous repertoire in your head. And secondly, I'm conversant in all the keys, and I as well as playing from the sight reading, which I do also very well. I see a lot of people in the beginning. It's an interesting story. David Kusevitsky, for example, the Sholem, who, by the way, was one of the finest gentlemen you want to meet.
Uh-huh.
This is how it started, or how I started with him in 1978, I think it was. I lived prior to being up here. I lived in Buffalo, New York, where I was a chazan there for 9 years.
Wait a second. You didn't even mention that. Where in Buffalo?
I was in, first started out in the city, and then the synagogue moved up to the suburbs, and they moved up to Amherst. Well, are you familiar with Buffalo?
No, but that was before you came to New York City.
I'm in Philadelphia. I was a chazan over here for 26 years, and so that's why I came up east.
Uh-huh.
Here. And Wait a minute. Let me get this straight here now. Oh yes, I was in New York when I left Cleveland, uh-huh. And then from there I got the position in Buffalo.
Oh,
and then from Buffalo I got a position in Philadelphia.
Well, during that time, so, when you were in Buffalo, were you accompanying Chazanim in concerts?
Yeah, Ben Sion was in Toronto at the time.
I see.
Ben Sion was in Shari Tefila in Toronto.
Okay,
and I used to go in. If there was a concert, I would go in and play. I played with Harold Klein, with Tibor Kellen, Alva Sholem, whoever the Chazonim were around those days.
I see.
So one year they brought David Kusevitsky to do a concert in Shari Tefila, the shul where Ben Sion was Chazon. And he decided to use somebody locally. He used to use Reuven Kosakoff. You heard that name?
No.
Yeah. Reuven Kosakoff was a very fine composer, musician, pianist. And he got old and sick, and he couldn't do it anymore. So Ben Sion told him, he says, why don't you take Danny Gildar to play for you? He didn't know that I read music. He thought I play only by ear, you know? So he wanted somebody that could read. So he decided to audition me. So I went to Brooklyn. He lived on in the Caton Apartments on Ocean Parkway. I went up there, and the first thing he did, he threw in front of me his piece, Ano Abdo de Kutcha Barico. You familiar with that?
I believe so.
You know, it's a very famous...
Sure.
And it was written in the key signature of 7 flats, so which is one of the hardest keys to read in. So he threw this down, probably figuring that I probably wouldn't be able to play it. So he stuck it down on there, and I played it perfect. And then he threw down his piece, Liederkranz, which is a conglomeration of about 26 Yiddish songs all tied together, arranged by Leo Love. You heard that name before?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So he put that down. It took about 41 pages. And I read my way all the way through it, at which point I was sold already. And he told me, as a matter of fact, he says, one phrase, he says, that I played it. He says, you know, he used to talk very high, you know. He says, you play this better, he says, than anybody. He says, sometimes they don't play this part, you know. So I do good imitations, too.
Yes, I know.
And I was sold, and then I started to travel around with him. We went to Boston. We did the show in Israel. Every year, the Temple Emmanuel in Borough Park, you know, was his shul. We did yearly concerts there,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I got with him. So I really Ben Sion was really the one that sold him on the fact that he should take me to his accompanist.
I see.
Then, of course, once I was with him, I started to play with Genchoff a lot. I played with the Sholem Katz. I played with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did many concerts together.
Well, I'm sure that every chazan of note since the 70s, 60s or 70s, you've accompanied at one time or another.
For sure. I played with Misha Alexandrovich.
Mm-hmm.
I did work with him in concert because he at one time was a chazan in Toronto.
I see.
So we did several concerts together. And I played with all of them, with the Bagley of Lasholem. I worked quite a bit with David Bagley, you know, mm-hmm. of course, on those trips.
Yes.
Where Stern was there, and Arya Brown of Lasholem was there, Danto of Lasholem. Unfortunately, quite a few of these wonderful talents are no longer here.
No, but there are some interesting talents that are on the rise.
True. But we miss those great luminaries, you know, mm-hmm. that you know, we're always saddened when one of them leaves this earth.
Sure,
you know?
That's for sure.
And unfortunately, my good young friend, Moshe Shulhoff of Shalom, that was a big tragedy.
Can you imagine, Danny, it's 2 years. This June, we're in July, just a week or two ago, is the second Yahrzeit.
I attended the funeral.
I was there. I went to the cemetery also, and I did a special a couple of weeks ago on Shulhoff. He was terrific.
Very, very, very sad.
Yeah, I think he was 65 or 66 years old. It's too young. It's too young.
The cancer went through him very fast.
Yes. I think we were together at his last concert up in New Rochelle.
Correct.
Yeah,
right.
That was with Benson Miller, I think, and Yankee Lemmer.
And Yankee Lemmer, correct.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be another concert this year, I think. I spoke to Tantalov, you know.
Yes.
I saw him, where did I see him? I saw him recently,
uh-huh.
and I think he mentioned he's going to probably be organizing another show this year.
Yeah, they do some great work. Tantalov does some great work there. So I just want to ask you, you mentioned Rosenblatt as one of your earlier favorites. Let's not talk about living cantors, because I guess that would get to be an issue. But who were some of the other great cantors from the past who influenced you the most?
Well, of course, Mordechai Heschman, Kvartin, you know, Ber Lechagi, whoever were recording in those days. You know,
mm-hmm.
Some wonderful, Sirota, of course, phenomenal voice.
Yes.
Phenomenal. course, we don't have any idea probably what it sounded like really in person.
I know.
People I've spoken to said that he had one of the most powerful voices of anybody.
Yes.
That you couldn't sit in the second row even without your ears popping, you know?
Yes.
That it was so powerful. I'm talking without a microphone.
Mm-hmm. And it's so sad, of course, he was killed in the Warsaw Ghetto, I think, in 43. But as you know, as a collector of the old recordings, some of the recordings were done rather primitively. And it's really amazing that we were even able to get the sound that we are able to get today.
He recorded originally on cylinders. His first work was done on cylinders, I think. He may have been the first cousin that recorded altogether, I think.
I know you have some old cylinders, don't you, of Chazanis?
I don't have of him. But I have about 100 Jewish cylinders, Yiddish and a little bit Chazanis, all announced in Yiddish on the Edison wax, 2-minute wax cylinders.
Well, Danny, we have to record that. I want to do a program with that. I have to come down and record because I have no Yiddish cylinders. Obviously, I have the 78s.
You have any Jewish cylinders?
None. I have hundreds of cylinders, but I was never able to come up with
them. I have to tell you how I got this. This is a very interesting story. You know, there used to be a gentleman in Brooklyn by the name of Konigsberg.
Yes.
Nothing to do with Cousin Konigsberg, I think, unless it's a cousin.
Yeah, didn't he have a publication? Yes.
Antique Phonograph Collectors.
Yes, yes, he was great.
So I used to get, they used to send newsletters
out
and stuff.
Sure.
So they sent, I used to pay dues every year. I don't even know if he's alive anymore.
I tried to track him down a few years back, and because he was a font of great information for lovers of the old
Vitrolas. He had an ad in the phonograph paper. It said, original Jewish 2-minute cylinders. Somebody in Florida, I can't remember, and it was years ago, in original packing. It was an original, I have the original box. It's a cylinder box where you send cylinders. It's a wooden box. Beautiful piece. The box itself is probably valuable, you know. And in every one of them is in an original box, and it had even typewritten lists written in longhand in Yiddish writing. And they're all flawless cylinders. What I did, I recorded them years ago on reels, you know, because I was afraid that I was going to break them, you know, because they're very fragile.
Of course.
And I put them away, and they're sitting in my cabinet in the basement.
Well, that doesn't help me, and that doesn't help my listeners. Danny, I got to come down and record them because, oh my gosh, you know, cylinders. I've heard that they were cylinders, but I, in all my travels.
The only way to record them, we would have to probably take them to somebody that has. See, I have my cylinder players here.
Yes.
The only way that I could record is I would have to just put a microphone in front of the horn, you know.
Well, that's the way to do it.
Actually, there are electronic ways of doing this now. That people have electronic hookups where they can attach it to the machine where you won't get any interference, you know, like a fire engine going by or a garbage truck grinding garbage, you know.
Yeah, but not of spring Victrolas. That's probably good for electric phonographs.
But they have certain processes now where you can record a cylinder directly, so you can get rid of some of the surface noise and stuff, you know.
Are you talking about a cylinder or a 78 RPM?
No, cylinders. I have cylinders. There are ways.
I haven't seen it.
Electronically.
Okay, so let's do it. Let's do it, Danny. I mean, we have to share this with the world. Anyway, I just want to ask you one crazy question. Where do you think Chazanis is going?
Well, I'll tell you, in the concert field, the Chazanis seems to be growing. I mean, there seems to be an interest in coming to the concert. The problem is that we need to get the Chazanim back in shul at the Omud, you know, at the pulpit. This is the frustration. How do we get the cantor back on the pulpit, on the bima, to really do what he's really supposed to do, Mr. Davin, and be a shliach tzibur for the olam, you know?
Yes.
And unfortunately, many in the Orthodox field, there's not the interest in it, which there should be, because there's a certain stereotype that they associate a chazan with dragging it out. they associate a chazan with the saying the words over so many times. The chazan, he's only there to entertain. This is the prevailing opinion today, which is a false opinion. A chazan can daven shorter than a bal tevilah, and it will be a much more quality presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And the words will come out right, the nusach will be correct. And because I have been at minyonim where bal tevilah, regular
sure.
people from the audience get up and daven, sometimes it could take a half hour longer than a chazan would take,
Yes.
So this is what we need to do, and I know that you've been a champion of this concept also. And we've discussed this before.
Yes, yes.
We need to get the chazan back in shul.
Well,
and this is what we should be working toward.
The
concerts is another thing.
Yes.
There are concerts happening now. Israel chazonis is very popular.
Yes. Well, I had a crazy idea that there should be a chazonis month. We'll take 1 month, and every shul in America during that month would bring in one chazan, or maybe even two.
That would be wonderful.
And you know what? If every shul would just bring in a chazan for one Shabbos, there'd be a lot of work, and maybe even do it twice a year. But let's see, National Chazanut Month. What do you think of that, Danny?
We already have Jewish Music Month already.
Uh-huh.
The Shabbos to do it would be Shabbos Shira.
Uh-huh.
When we read the Oz Yashir Moshe, the song of the Red Sea.
Yes.
That would probably be the time to do it.
Okay, listen, we have to organize that. We have a lot of work to do, Danny, but I just want to tell you that I am so pleased and proud to know that that we have a good relationship, and I'm honored when I see you and hear you, because you, by the way, you help the chazan, and so, a lot of people don't understand this, but sometimes when the chazan drifts a little or doesn't quite move in the right direction, you save them with your piano, and you have that ability, which is so incredible.
How about the one that left out an entire page of a piece?
No.
That happened. I had one, this is a session itself. I had one cousin who will remain nameless.
Okay.
Who had a very poor ear, and by the time he got finished with the song, he was already one note higher in key already.
Uh-huh.
He kept climbing higher and higher, going sharp, in music.
Uh-huh.
So my ear went right along and changed the key as we went along. And I don't think to this day he realizes that he didn't end up in the same key he started in.
Uh-huh.
Well, so that's why they call me, because they know that in any kind of emergency situations, I even had things when I was working with David, because when I worked with David, it was the end of his career, it was the last 6-7 years.
Right.
Sometimes he would need a little bit of a breather.
Yes.
So I would play something, improvise something to mm-hmm. fill in, so he can. And I sense, being a voice teacher and a singer myself,
yes,
and a chazan, I could sense that he needs a little breath. So I did it, and then by the time I got through, he was revived. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. That's fantastic.
Then there are those that play exactly what's written, and they would get flustered in this kind of situation,
Well, Danny, just my closing thought is, we have a lot of work to do. We're going to do those cylinders. We're going to bring them to the audience. And I really want to come down to your home in Philadelphia and go over your collection. We keep threatening to get together, and I think it's time. You're going to be 70 already. I'm going to be 80 already. Time is going by much too fast, and we have to do it.
I have reached the next plateau, as they used to say on the $64,000 question, if you remember that show.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Danny, I wish you and of course your wife, I know she, we wish her a refu shlema, but I wish you many more years of good health, and keep on doing the great work that you do with Chazonis, and just be healthy.
Thank you.
Okay, that was an interview with Danny Gildar, and for those of you who may not be familiar with Levi Kanis, I'm so proud to introduce you to him. He's just a dynamite individual, totally dedicated to Chazanut, and also involved with discovering many of the fine young cantors that are around today, particularly in Israel. I hope one day for the possibility of getting involved with him on some projects. Okay, let's hear Levi Kanis from Israel. Levi Kanis, an impresario of Chazonis, a lover of Chazonis, a kindred spirit, and shalom. How are you, Levi?
Hi, Charlie. Nice to hear you. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem. How are things in Israel at the moment?
Well, you know, Israel always has its problems, but we're survivors.
So, that's for sure.
God willing, we'll survive and we'll continue.
That's for sure. Before we get into talking about Chazonis, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, where you grew up.
All right. I was born during the Second World War in the Netherlands, in The Hague. I was put on transport with my mother to a concentration camp, but the train stopped in a Dutch city. The Germans at that time wanted to impress the Dutch that they were so kind. And that occasion, a nurse stole me off the train, passed me to the underground, and to a Catholic family that raised me till I was 5 years old.
Wow.
My mother miraculously returned from Mengele, and in 1948, she managed through the courts to get me back. She remarried an Orthodox Jew, David Kalush, and they decided to move to Montreal so that their boy can go to yeshiva and have a Jewish education. That's where I started, and that's where my love from Chazonish started. I sang in a choir in Montreal with Chazon Rosenzweig in 1952, and I wanted to be a Chazon.
Wow. And then from Montreal?
From Montreal, they sent me to Torah Vedas. I studied in a few years in Williamsburg. Came back to Montreal, finished the Yeshivas Merkaz HaTorah, that's Mir. And when I was 18, I went to Israel. I was Zionistic. I was a member of Bnei Akiva. I went to Kibbutz Lavi, and on the way to Israel, April 1961, I met my wife on the ship. She came from Costa Rica with her grandparents. They wanted her also to have a Jewish education in Israel. And then I joined the army for a year and a half. When I finished, I got married. And Baruch Hashem, I have an Eshet Chayal, 52 years.
Wow.
Who also, by the way, loves Chazonish. My luck.
It is difficult when they're not into it, for sure. By the way, we were at Kibbutz Lavi just a few weeks ago, part of our Chizuk tour. It's a wonderful, for people who don't know, they have hotel, it's a hotel, I guess, wonderful accommodations up in the north for those.
Oh, yeah, they're popular. We do sometimes a Shabbos Chazonut there.
Really?
They organize it once a year. So Chazonish lovers come for a Shabbat and they bring different Chazonim. The last time we were there, unfortunately, he's not with us anymore, a great Chazon, Moshe Shulhoff.
Oh, yes. It's 2 years. It's 2 years, by the way. I just
did a special. Yeah, I managed Moshe Shulhoff for about 6-7 years.
Oh, my gosh.
He got a lot of work through me. I took him to Hungary. He was not only a great chazan, a great actor. He was an all-around great person.
I
miss him many times.
A great loss.
Both his chazunish and his talent.
Yes. It was a great loss for the world of chazanis. I was at his last concert in New Rochelle, I believe. And I saw him, and we knew that the end was not far away.
Yeah,
but he performed wonderfully that at that wonderful.
By the way, I will send you a few CDs that you can use for your program. But I made a record with him. I don't know if you know about it. Not Chazonish, called Around the World in 8 languages.
I have
and
it.
And he sings on there. He comes across like a Placido Domingo. He does Granada in Spanish. He does French. He does Russian,
yes.
Hungarian, Italian. He was very, very gifted. English, Have It My Way. So I will send you this CD that I made with him to impress the people that Chazonim, some of them are tremendous singers all around, not just for Chazonish. And he was one of those.
I also heard him do a Mexican Kedusha, which was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Where did you earn your living? Because I know Chazonis is not a money.
Well, Chazonis only cost me money.
Uh-huh.
I never did Chazonis to make money. The people say, "What? You're a manager? I don't deal with managers." I'm not a manager. I'm a Abba Ruchani. a father figure that helped Chazunim get established. I've, thank God, supported many youngsters to pay for their schooling in the institute from Naftali Hershtik. The ones that I considered really good, I started actually a long time ago, 35 years ago, with Benjamin Müller from Antwerpen. I managed him, and then I went on. But when I came back now, 20 years ago from Costa Rica, I went for a while. Then I started with Yaakov Rosenfeld. I worked with Glick. I made him a record. I made Yaakov Rosenfeld a record. Tzude Greenwald, and lately, a dream come true, Tzvi Weiss. The reason I say a dream come true is because, you know, Charlie, you're looking in a chazan. He should be a Yirei Shamayim and a mensch, and then a great chazan. This young man, 27 years old, qualifies everywhere. When he sent me a piece to listen, if I think he has a future, I said, too good to be true, come tomorrow to Kfar Horeh. I want to hear your nusach. I don't want to hear your interpretations of Pinchik and Leibele Glanz or Kosovitsky. I want to hear nusach. First, before you can run, you have to walk. And I heard a beautiful nusach. I said, where did you get this tremendous nusach? As a boy, he had a chazan visiting his house all the time, and he inspired him, Lantush, from Tel Aviv. And this is Tzvi Weiss. And then he has a krechtzele in that voice, that bechi, that gevein, you know, that cry.
Yes.
And when he sings, you feel it, and your goose pimples are standing, you're getting cold. Somebody told me, yes, I went to hear his slichas, I had to take a jacket. I said, what for? He said, I was all cold from listening to him. I got shivers.
Chills,
he said, I took my jacket. This is this young man that you heard the last concert in Tel Aviv with the Philharmonic Orchestra when he did Umipnei Chatueinu.
Yes.
And Usyidish Lit. You heard him in the concert that I did with him when he did some pieces together with Yaakov Stark in a concert and finished the evening with the Sfiras Oimer that wrote for us, Dr. Lieberman.
Yes.
I'm happy that at my old age, because I'm already a few good years by after 70, I found such a talent, such a wonderful young man, like a son to me. We were in London last week. I went with him where he davened in the St. John's Wood Synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you're asking me about future of Chazunish, we had to change the presentation in shul. Actually, he did only one real piece of Chazunish, Ma Yisroel, Leibele Glanz et Musaf. All the tefillah was singing, getting the public to join with you. Beautiful things, Pele, Karl Bach, all kind of Hasidic tunes, marches. But the public was excited and they joined in for every piece of tefillah.
This was in London.
This is the future today. They want it short and sweet, and to join.
Uh-huh. By the way, yes, I was at that concert in Tel Aviv just a few weeks ago when I saw you, and I have to tell you, he really is so superb. I just felt, for you, I know your role in bringing him out, and I congratulate you. He lives up to all that you can hope for, that's for sure.
Now, you know that we have a fan of his in Montreal, the one that came to the concert in Brooklyn, Tzatmer Chosit, that has 30 more Hasidim like him. But they really want the old style of Chazunish, Kvarten, and Yosele. And they bring him once a year for Shabbos to Montreal in Chesky Leibovich's living room. We have 30 Hasidim with Stramelech. They're the choir. And we'll start at 8 o'clock in the morning and we finish at 2 o'clock, Davnik. They will milk him every piece. Even at the end, they'll still want, of course, Shir HaLevim and whatnot.
Right.
But this is, and he did this last Shabbos in Petach Tikva.
Wow.
He started at 8:30 Shoychanat, and at 1:45 they finished. But these are still very few communities that really are into Chazonish. They want to be connected in the tefillah. They want to feel the Shechina. They want to feel they're getting closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam and maybe open a gate. But the Kahal Klali and the big synagogues and Poel Mizrahi, they're in a hurry. They don't want later than 11 o'clock at the most, and they want just to sing together with the Baal Tefillah.
Yeah, It does seem, by the way, that the Hasidim have a true appreciation for chazanis. They don't have chazanim normally in their shuls, I gather.
I must tell you, if you'll allow me.
Of course.
The when we were at the concert in Brooklyn, we stayed Shabbos with my cousin, Rav Kalush, who is the Gabbe in Vizhnitz in Flatbush, with Rav Mandel. Now, he asked Tzvi to daven Shachris in Vizhnitz. Tzvi daven Shachris, of course, Nusach. Not Chazunish, the real Nusach from the Hasidim. At the end of the Tfile, Rav Mandel came over to me and said, Reb Levi, there's two people that open up Sharei Shamayim, the gates of heaven. The Bal Tfile and the Rav with the Drusha from Shabbos HaGudl. After I listened to Tzvi, my Drusha wasn't worth anything. I said, Rav, what a compliment. What a humble Rebbe, and what a beautiful compliment for the Chazan.
Now, where is Tzvi Weiss davening now? I mean, does he have a regular...
Well, Tzvi's shul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, there's a famous shul in North Tel Aviv from Rabbi Goren, the ex-chief rabbi and chief rabbi of Israel and of the army. It's Safon Tel Aviv. They have him there for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's the still the old-style people with the high society, the Kablanim. One Kablan, Baronovich, very famous. He said to me a few months ago, you know, the first time, Yom Kippur, I was sorry that they finished davening.
Wow.
Said I could have continued another hour listening to your chazan.
Interesting.
They have him there for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And then every Shabbos, usually, he's in a different shul because they repeat. Petach Tikva, he was in Shiloh. We were in Alon Shvut 3 weeks ago. Another very nice place with 800 people till 1 o'clock. But because they enjoy good tefillah, they want to be connected. These are people really, you know, that come to Davin, not like in London. All they do there is come to see each other and they talk.
Now,
are very disturbing for a chazan when he's singing
course.
And people are talking.
Of course, of course. Are there any plans for him coming to the States?
Mirat Hashem, you know, I didn't do this year the Sphera concert, but I think in the near future, maybe even with your help, and I will help a bit, finance part of it, we can maybe do something nice. You have some outstanding chazunim as well. Yanka Lemmer is a great chazan. I'm talking about the new generation.
Sure.
Our friend Müller,
Zevi,
the
Moore,
wonderful, sweet chazan.
Yes.
I think a concert with these, the new generation of chazonim that are also into variation, not just heavy chazonish singing interpretations, we could make a great evening.
No, we should have a Shabbos chazanut. Can you
Even
imagine?
Better.
Wow. Oh, wow. Would that be something? Zvi Weiss, Yanki Lemmer, and Zevi Muller. Wow. I'm ready to...
Would be a great Shabbos like we do here, Shabbat Shira.
Uh-huh.
One does Mariv, one does Shachris and Musaf, and a few things together. And maybe then also in the evening they give a little
concert.
And people are thrilled. And I think you can fill a hotel because there's still enough Chazunish lovers that would come for an event like that.
Well, there are plans underway for a Shabbos Chazanut that it's premature for me to discuss. But Benny and I are sort of hoping that it will spur a resurgence in that Shabbos Chazanut that when Benny and I did a lot of things together, but I think that was when you had a real chance to hear the real thing. I mean, it's one thing to perform at a concert, when it's in shul and it has the significance of the tefillah.
And the people that are coming, you know, when you do it in a hotel, after Shachris and Leinen, they make a kiddush.
Right.
People have something to eat, they make a kiddush, and then they have patience, another hour, an hour and a half to a good Muslim.
Right, that's what we always did.
You cannot keep a hungry crowd.
No, at 11 o'clock we had the Kiddush, and then they came back at 12, and then the Muslim was, they could go on for as long as they wanted. Hey, listen.
Yeah, well, okay, at least a good hour and a half, and
right.
Give a beautiful interpretation. Now, one of the special things that I am trying to do with Svi, I just now saw we can put together a CD live concert. He's got 13 of them with the Philharmonic. But I'm impressing Svi. He learned to read and write and compose. That Svi Weiss has to start composing his own stuff.
Yes.
He has to do his stuff we have enough copycats. It's beautiful. Many chazonim do pinchik zrozet de Shabbos and label Shema Yisrael. But it's not the same like if they come out with beautiful new things, with feeling, tefillah. So this is, the great chazonim all had their own style. If you take any of them, Hirschman, Yosele, Kvartan, they all had their own pieces.
Yes.
Nobody did anybody else's. And this somehow got lost in the last 50 years. Everybody is doing famous pieces.
Yes,
and create the, new pieces that are not less beautiful.
Right, and improvisation.
When I listen to the Sfiras HaOmer that they made for him, it's a beautiful Sfiras HaOmer. I got the Radio South Africa wrote me, it's a big hit. They played it every night during the Sfira.
Wow.
People loved it. You know, there's no reason why a young, talented chazan like Müller, like Lemmer, like Tzvi Weiss, shouldn't be able to bring new compositions to the world that are theirs.
Yes, yes. And of course, Stern was so great at improvisation, and it's rare to hear that nowadays also. I'm just curious, who were some of the old chazanim who influenced you? Did you have some favorites?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but I was influenced by two chazanim that I listened to all the time, and maybe because I liked them so much, I didn't give enough time to listen to other ones. Yosele Rosenblatt was number one.
Yes.
I grew up on Yosele. My mother used to tell me, stop screaming. The neighbors will think I'm hitting you. I used to blare away Racham Noshem or Keinu or whatever it was. The other one that really inspired me is Yoshua Vider.
Interesting.
Yoshua Vider was chazan in Montreal. I used to hear him in Shabbosim.
Uh-huh.
Who were also, he was a friend of my late stepfather. He was a chazan that had the feeling, the neshume.
Mm-hmm.
So all the young people that I trained, before they go any further, I said, first you're going to do me a piece. Like Weiss, I gave him Ana Bechoach Vider.
Mm-hmm.
Do something Vider to get the feeling of regesh, of feeling, of depth. He was a tremendous Bal Tfile Chazan, this Yeshua Vider, and he inspired me very much. His Mimkoim Cho, his many things. Moidi Menachnu Loch, beautiful. Of course, there were other great chazonim, but like I told you, you had limited time that you could listen.
Sure.
And I spent most of my time listening to Yosele.
Well, there was enough of Yosele. He recorded 200 different selections.
I couldn't find one single thing that Yosele did that wasn't fantastic.
Yes.
He was a great chazon with a great range and a great compositions and feeling.
Yes.
Undoubtedly.
But
Tzvi Weiss did very well Yosele's pieces, but his voice is more a pinchik, a glanz. He's a lyric tenor. He'll do Rosh de Shabbos or Shema Yisrael to perfection because he's got the right voice for it.
Uh-huh.
He'll do a very good job with other chazonim too, but that's really his style, lyric. He's not a Kosovitsky.
Well, I'm so pleased that you haven't been frustrated in this adventure, because it can be at times frustrating, and you know, we just have to keep moving forward. We can't let setbacks set us back.
You know, Charlie, the main problem we have with Chazunish that during the years, where did it cost me so much money? Not helping the chazan to send them to train. It's to give them stage. You have to put them on a stage to get them to be known. And if you want to make a concert and you have to finance it, you're going to end up losing money because there's not enough. Here, look now, the last Sfira concert. Who did I bring? The top chazunim in the world, Yaakov Motzen, great chazan. Yaakov Stark and Müller and Tzvi Weiss, and what did we get? 400 people.
It should have been standing room only.
You cannot cover $30,000 expense with 400 tickets at $36.
Right.
That's $14,000. You're short at $20,000 for the evening, which means somebody has to dig in his pocket and put them up. It's okay if it's a organization that's going to raise funds, and they make a big event, and people are buying tickets not because they just because they like Chazunish or don't like. They want to help the organization. Sure, I'll buy for $500, $200, and the organization raised a couple of $100,000, and they chopped off $40,000 for the concert. That's the only way, because the minute you're making a concert and you have to pay for it, you're losing money.
Well, Benny and I,
Abram Fried that can fill 5,000 people in a hall.
Well, Benny and I, unfortunately, were well aware of this because we used to sell out, and still people say, you made a fortune. We said, you have no idea. Once you start with the advertising and paying for the just paying for the auditorium is in the choir and sometimes it's an orchestra.
This is the biggest problem this is the biggest problem in helping Chazonim today, because they need a stage.
Yes.
And, this is it. Nobody wants to, and the government is not helping very much. Dr. Sobel's programs in Echal Tabut, you see there are 3,000 people there, 2,500 to be correct.
Sorry. Yes.
But it's still short $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Philharmonic is very expensive. So all the time his Amuta has to raise money to cover the losses. And he used to get it from the government. The government in the last 2 years has not given any money for these concerts, which puts him in a very dire situation on how to continue.
I know.
And he has elevated Chazon Ish to a level like Wagner and Beethoven. We have beautiful compositions for a Philharmonic completely. It's amazing how he has written scores and brought up Chazon Ish from a piano or a shtibl to a Philharmonic orchestra.
And his son Ofer, by the way, is also
very talented.
Brilliant, very, very talented.
No doubt about it. They're tops. And I've had a privilege to have Zvi study with Dr. Sobel 3 years. Every week, Sobel fell in love with Zvi, as did Moshe Stern, by the way, who he's working with right now.
Really?
Moshe Stern told him, you're the only chazan that can do my Riboyne Shel Olam Bezdin Tzedek. And they're working on it now to record it.
Wow. I look forward to that.
And he had the other day a concert, Moshe Stern's evening also. He did Uvechen Yehi Rotzon, Moshe Stern. Moshe Stern said to him, it's better than I did it. And the people now call him the Uvechen Yehi Rotzon Chazan. But Moshe Stern, of course, was the greatest chazan in the last 30, 40 years. Undoubtedly, he was one of the tops. But Moshe Stern told Zvi Weiss, Zvi, you're great. You'll be one of the greatest chazonim in the world. There's only one problem. There's no future.
I mentioned that when I interviewed Chaim Adler a couple of years ago, and I said, when a young fellow comes to me and he'll say, how do you become a chazan? I want to become a chazan. I say, look, I don't know. If you're a health guy, that's one thing. But if you're not and you want to earn at least $100,000 or more a year to support a family, send kids to yeshiva, have a home, and live a fairly nice life, you better get a living and let this be an avocation. And I remember, I'm repeating myself from another interview, Chaim said, no. If you have the desire and you just move forward, things will be okay. And I said, okay. I didn't argue with him on that.
Well, I send Zvi Weiss to study in university to get a degree that he can also work at other things besides being a chazan.
Uh-huh.
Because I really feel, like you just mentioned, chazan is very good as a sideline. If you really want to make a living from it, there's very few organizations today in the world that keep a chazan at a decent wage. One of the exceptions is probably Chimayer Helfgott and maybe a few more. But I see Zvi Weiss is a top chazan. He's fantastic.
Yes.
And I don't see any shul saying, here, we'll give him $150,000 a year. We want him. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the budget.
Right.
When he came to me, I suggested to Inglewood, New Jersey, that Chaim Adler was leaving, and they heard Weiss. They said, he's for us. They gave him $15,000, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for 2 years in a row. And then they said, our budget is very hard. We can't afford it. We're going to look for a local person to take down the expenses.
Yeah.
And since then, they've used local chazan. And the shuls, they'll have $400,000 budget for a rabbi, but not for a chazan for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
I'm told
it's
that
it's sort of not the top priority in the shuls.
No.
To have a good bal tefillah or a good chazan.
There's somewhere there was a statement that there was a halacha or whatever that it was between a rabbi and a cantor. If you didn't have enough to support the two, you should hire the cantor unless the rabbi was gadol or just, you know. I thought that was an interesting. Obviously.
Well, I'll tell you why. You see, I'm a Levi.
Uh-huh.
My name is Levi. I'm a Levi.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked to many rabbonim who sort of don't support Chazunish because they really want to have the Breitel and the attention of the crowd. But what do we have today instead of Korbunis? There's no more sacrifices. What we have today is Tfile. And if the sacrifice was supposed to be perfect without a blemish, Kal v'chomer Tfila should be as beautiful as possible to present it to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam with the hope that it's accepted. Which means you don't send every Yankel or Moshe to Davin because he's got your side. Let him say Kaddish. But you have a Bal Tfile who presents the Tfile beautifully, without mistakes, with the right tropen. Because this is instead of Korbunis. But nobody is training the people to look at it that way. Because this is the way I feel, and I discuss it with Rabbonim. At the end, they say, well, I guess you're right, but. No, I saw in London, just to give you an example,
mm-hmm.
and it's funny, I must tell you what happened to me. Somebody, Davin Psuke de Zimre, very beautiful. What about Tfilah, my God? When he finished, I was sitting near the front where you walk up to the Orna Kodesh, where the Rav sits and everybody. He walked by me, and I said to him, Ashkoyach, with a bal tefillah like you, I don't know why you brought me here with a chazan. He smiled, but he didn't say anything. He went up. Later I learned it's Rabbi Jonathan, Lord Jonathan Sachs, the ex-chief rabbi of England. Now, when Tzvi was davening, everybody was speaking all the time. They met each other, and maybe 400 people came. When Rabbi Sachs spoke for 20 minutes, you could hear a pin drop. You see, they have their cherets for a rav,
right.
But okay. Not for a tefillah.
Uh-huh.
But tefillah, you're talking to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you know? But the people lost it. After I met, we had lunch. We were invited by the chairman, very nice.
Uh-huh.
And at that lunch, the rabbi with his wife was there, and also the Dayan Binglewich was there. And then I made friends with Lord Sachs, and I told his wife, I'm so embarrassed. I didn't know that was your husband. Well, she said he enjoyed the compliment that he's a good bal tefillah.
That's great. That's a great story.
But you see, this is the difference. The people, actually the rabbunim, should educate already in schools the importance of good tefillah. Just like you want to have a bal koire. He should lane perfectly with the right tropen,
mm-hmm.
and he prepares himself the whole week.
Sure.
With this, the same with tefillah. But somehow this message got lost.
Mm. Well, listen, you and I and others, there's a few of us who just keep fighting the battle, and we're not going to give up. And I admire your tenacity and also your good judgment. The cantors who have been your proteges, all of them were very special. And of course, Tzvi Weiss is particularly special.
No, Baruch Hashem, they're all successful. I have good relations with them. You saw that at the concert you were at. They used some of the chazonim that I raised. They're all doing well, Baruch Hashem. They're all nice people. They're all correct people. They're good chazonim. Because when I see the talent in them, I'll spend the time and effort to develop them. But this is it. But anyway, I hope if you have any negotiations there, count on me. I will make it as convenient as possible price-wise, not to make it more expensive for the organizers.
Uh-huh.
We're more interested in coverage than anything else.
Sure.
And if I know with time when you want to do this in the States, a weekend, I'll see that maybe that same week we can afterwards be in Montreal, so the combination lowers the costs
mm-hmm.
for both parties involved.
Right.
See, that's another thing. We have to try to do our best not to make it expensive
sure.
for people that are willing to risk some of their money to promote an event.
Sure. You know, just as an aside, when I mentioned when Benny and I ran Cantor's World, even when we sold out the Metropolitan Opera, we lost money that night. And they said, how do you lose money when you sell out the house? And I said, first of all, let's start with the orchestra.
You're paying $50,000 for the orchestra.
It was $100,000.
And
then you're paying for the Met, and then you advertise. You're not even talking about starting with the choir and the talent. You know how, I don't have to explain it to you. If you don't have the backing of foundations, I live across the street from the Lincoln Center, and you see the Met and the New York Philharmonic, they make no money on, no profit on ticket sales, even if they sell out. It's only by foundations and all the benefactors and contributors that they stay alive. And this is what we have to, someday, somehow, we're going to have to find some foundations that will appreciate the beauty and the necessity of keeping Chazanis alive, that they'll step up to the plate. So far, it's been difficult. Fortunately, there are some people around who do appreciate it, but we just have to keep working on that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Levy Karnas, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts
Charlie,
with us.
It's been a pleasure. I'm one of your admirers of the other side of the world that does everything out of love for the Chazon Ish, and I wish you and your family long and healthy, happy years, and be matzliach, and we should be able together to do something to continue to bring beautiful tefillah to the world.
Amen. Thank you so much, Levy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Shalom. Okay, this is Charlie back again, and I hope you enjoyed these interviews with Danny Gildar and Levy Karnas. Of course, the first hour was Naftali Herstick, Bensian Miller, and Shimmy Miller. If you have comments or requests, you know how to reach me at cbjmusic@aol.com, cbjmusic@aol.com. I will continue to have interviews for next week, and then I will probably continue periodically with more of these interviews, because I think it's very important. It's important that from a historical viewpoint that we have these records, these recordings. Thank you so much for joining with me, and shalom.